Still the best version of it. I know they did a version with, what's his name, Keith Urban got together with, and they sort of revved it up a little bit, but this, the pace of that is a more a trucking pace to me Slim Dusty. Jeff Casey, lovely to see you here. Thanks for coming in.
All right.
And thanks for actually coming from beyond Palmerston. You reckon you don't actually come into town very much at all these days?
Oh, I try to avoid it. I don't have much cause to come in. But,
so life is Berry Springs?
Oh, no, it's, you know, I sort of float around a bit and, just float around as needed, go where I have to.
Go where you have to, which is very rarely in a radio studio.
Absolutely not.
How did you get talked into this? Who talked you into this?
I'm not quite sure, actually. I think it was a sweet-talking young lady on the end of a phone.
That can happen.
Bit of a sucker for that.
That can happen. That can happen. If you've just joined us, we are doing Remember This Afternoon with Jeff Casey. I was saying it's pretty rare to find a born and bred Territorian. You're exactly that.
Yeah, well, there's not many of us left here.
Do you hang out only with your born and bred Territorians? Exclusive are you?
No, not very at all. I mean, I got one mate that was born here that I went to school with. He's still up here. Mm. Pretty much the rest of them, I lost track of all.
Mm.
All the kids I went to school with at Frog Hollow, I don't know where any of them are anymore. So
Frog Hollow was school?
Yeah, I landed there. I think it had just opened, and if I remember correctly, it only went to about grade four, I think, and then the big school that was six, seven, so I must have went to grade five, was over the other side where the car park is now. That was and the high school was over there as well.
Yeah.
And
Town would have looked pretty different.
Oh, yeah, a lot different. I mean, I can remember the Bank of New South Wales there never had a roof on after the, you know, when it had been bombed and everything. And I can remember the ships in the harbour, you know, laying alongside the wharf there, the wrecks around the place.
Mm. So you could, like, post the bombing of Darwin, you can remember the wrecks lying in the harbour still?
Yeah, yeah. The Peary with...
I would have thought you would... I was going to try not to be too rude. I was going to ask you when you were born, but you look like a man who was born in the 50s, but obviously not. Yeah. So 51 or something like that?
No, a little bit later.
A little bit later. So the wrecks were still laying around in the harbour for quite a few years after the war.
Yeah, I think it was in the 60s, early 60s, that the Japanese salvage crews came out here and cleaned them up.
Give me an idea about growing up and what home life was for you when you were first growing up in Darwin.
Oh, it was good. It was good. School was, you know, like we used to catch the bus there in front of Qantas. Well, that's Camilda now.
Oh, yeah.
That was the Qantas staff place. And, we'd come into Darwin, into Frog Hollow, and we had a mixed bunch of kids there. There was Aboriginal kids and Chinese kids and white kids, and we all knocked around.
And it was all barefoot knock around and running in the bush kind of stuff?
Oh, not quite, but pretty much, yeah. You know, we were pretty laid back and casual, and we were, you know.
Your mum and dad were both ex-army, so were posted up here during the war and just stayed. Is that how it worked?
Well, Dad came up here. He transferred up here from Woomera. He was down there when they started out. He was an underground cable specialist.
Hmm.
And he was transferred from Woomera to Darwin. I think he landed here in 52. And Mum came up. She was working at Larrakia. Like, she was a SIG as well. And, she'd served during the war years. Dad couldn't join up during the war because he got caught up in the manpower, controlled labour business. He started out in sugar. That was a protected industry, and he sort of went from there to cattle, which was a more protected industry, not realising it himself. And then he got into sheep, which was a top level, and he couldn't get out of that. So then the war finished, and he joined the army to get a job. So because things were, you know, because all the blokes had come back from overseas.
So what sort of stuff would he have been doing post-war for the army in the Northern Territory?
He's an underground cable specialist.
Yeah.
And those days, I used to have a lot of trouble with cables getting chewed up by white ants and things like that. And they had all sorts of nasty gases being pumped into the telephone cables.
Yeah.
To try and keep the white ants out. And down at Woomera, he was laying cable and all the communications gear, like that, telephone stuff down there. In the very early days, he landed down there, I think, in 48 when they were very first starting it. And he actually invented the cable spew, you know, the thing that the PMG use, or the, what do they call them now?
I don't know what Telstra. They call them now.
Yeah, Telstra.
Yeah.
You know, drags along behind with the bulldozer. They've got the bulldozer set up and they've got a big roll of cable on the
front.
Yeah,
so it puts the hole in at the front and puts the cable
well,
back in the back.
It actually works on a ripper. It's the ripper is on the back of the dozer.
Yeah.
And it's got like a tube at the back of the ripper.
Yeah.
Then that lays the cable. The ripper breaks the ground and the tube delivers the cable into the ground. Well, the old man actually invented that on the rocket range.
Did he get any money for it?
No. Of course not. Yeah, he's in the army. When you're in the army, they own you.
Yeah.
And anything you think of.
Brothers and sisters? So what was life like growing up?
Oh, I've got one sister. She's a bit older than me. She went to boarding school in Charter Stouts as well. And
now this is interesting because when you do the remember, you have to fill out a very large and detailed form, of course, because it's the ABC. We love filling out forms.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things that you said on your form filling out was that you'd gone to school in Charters Towers, and I couldn't work out why you would have to go to Charters Towers to do schooling when you could have just stayed here and gone to the high school here.
No, well, in those days. The high school and that was, it was here and it worked, sort of. But no, actually, at that time, my sister had started university in Brisbane the year before, and we moved down there. Well, mum, my sister, and myself, because my sister had never been into a city or anything like that before, you know, so it was a new environment. So we shifted down there. Dad came down and got us established and then came back working up here. And so I was in the Queensland system, and also they were both working out on the beef road, building beef roads. So, you know, there was no school within Cooey. I mean, we were working on the Carpentaria and the Tablelands Highway.
Yeah.
That was, what, 68?
So you're building a highway to get back home, basically.
Almost. No, well, Dad was the quarry master for Darwin Crushed Metal.
Yeah.
And mum was a camp cook, so they were almost nomads, you know. And we'd try correspondence for me when we were living down at Francis Creek, and that was a waste of time. And they said, well, since you're in the Queensland system now, you won't do correspondence, you might as well go to a proper school, and we'll edumacate you one way or another. Yeah, waste of time.
20 minutes past 3, 105.7 ABC. Now, I'm right across the territory chatting to Jeff Casey, and remember today, he's long-term territory. That must have been just about. So how long were you at Charters Towers? Just maybe 3 or 4 years or something?
Yeah,
like?
About 4 years, I think.
Is that the only 4 years that officially you haven't lived on territory soil?
Well, the year in Brisbane before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
And the entire time you've built your territory. Why not leave? What kept you here, do you reckon?
Oh, I've had a couple of goes at leaving. Yeah. But no, we ventured into a real estate development over in Caranda. We had 500 acres over there. We were doing subdivision and one thing or t'other. But we got hit with the recession we had to have. A few things went wrong there, and we were dealing with a bank. Which bank? Anyway, and they were slugging us, I think, 25.5% interest on a rather substantial overdraft, which was very
starting
difficult.
To wind you down. So that meant you had to eventually move back to town.
Well, we hadn't actually left town. We were just sort of working on it. We were laying foundations
planning to get out of town.
We were working on it.
But you were thwarted.
Yes.
Oh, right. There's always an excuse.
Best laid plans of mice and men.
You mentioned Francis Creek, though, and you said that in fact it's the place that you reckon is the best place you've ever lived. I mean, you've done a little bit of travelling. What's it about Francis Creek that rings in your mind?
Well, some people would say it's the Aboriginal in me.
Yeah,
I just feel at home. You know, I go down there and I look around and I think, yeah, this is my country. And I don't know, I just feel at peace there. And, I don't know, it's hard to explain, really. I just sort of feel a connection there, and it's just the good vibes. And
So do you have any Aboriginal blood in you at all?
Not actually.
So, not really. And that's an interesting experience, because a lot of white people don't feel that connection to the land, which is one of the things that a lot of Indigenous Australians talk about, the connection to the land. But you really feel it, like when you go to Francis Quill.
It is real. I understand what they're saying.
Hmm.
Actually, I grew up with some of the real old, well, what they, the old Cockeye Bob, he described himself as the last sort of prince of the Larrakeas.
Hmm.
There was old Cockeye and Havelock. They lived at, or Cockeye lived at Berrima with us on the block there, him and his family and a few others. And old Havelock and Agnes, that was his wife, and some of their boys, they lived out on Gilpinia Station with the Herbert brothers when they owned it out there. And I actually was initiated, inverted commas, into the Larrakeas by Cockeye and Havelock. And it was sort of, well, I mean, in those days, boys got circumcised when they were born, so... So as far as they were concerned, I was a man already. So that part of it was done. So it was like a mock sort of ceremony, you know, a bit of fun, I suppose. And, you know, I've got the red clay here and different things, whereas, like, Cockeye himself, he had big scars, big welts that had been, when he was initiated, they used to cut the skin and then they put little pebbles in the cut. And I'm not sure whether the pebble stayed there or just helped make the scar tissue grow big, you know. And it was quite a prominent scar.
Yeah.
And but instead of that, they just put the clay on there.
But it says to me that you had a lot of respect with Indigenous people, that they would want to initiate you.
Well, I mean, I was only young. And, I mean, these guys worked for Dad, were building fences and things like that, and Dad just treated everybody the same, and, you know, you do your work, you get your pay. And I had an old partner in crime. He died a couple of years ago down in Bendigo. We had a few little ventures together. And he just about got run out of Hatches Creek for the same sort of thing. He had a couple of Aboriginal blokes working for him. He paid them the same wages as white blokes, and... the copper's gone on to him, and except that Alf was a bit of a wild lad. The story is that he sort of put about six of them in hospital in Tennant Creek one time, and ended up in the slammer himself. But like he used to tell me, he says, "By jings, I did some damage before they got me there, though."
It's the sense of the territory that people want to believe is still alive. You know, that kind of that wild boy edge, that frontier edge. You definitely would have lived through the era when it was definitely that.
Oh, it was real.
Do you mourn the loss of what the frontier version of the NT was to an extent?
I think so. Yes. Yeah, a lot of the characters are gone. Old Cranky Frankie down in Frankie Atkinson from Pine Creek. He's, you know, the blokes like that are gone. He was a bit of a wild lad. I can't think of the other bloke. You know, just sort of trying to think of those people. But yeah, there was, you know, it was a lot more of a free and easy sort of thing. You were left to do your own thing, sort of thing. People were responsible for themselves. They weren't sort of wrapped up in cotton wool the way people are done these days with bloody legislation and all sorts of rubbish like that. And
the safety Nazis.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, those people would have a heart attack if they, like, you know, at Berrima, if you went down to the shed, well, you'd find there'd be at least a case of jelly there, and in the kitchen under the sink lived the box of debts, and there was a roll of fuse there, and probably, you know, I mean... There was always, well, Mum had her little pea rifle for, she had two 22s.
Oh, yeah.
One was an old one that only a single shot, and she used to run rat shot in that, so, you know, it was for chasing snakes and things like that.
So you grew up in Berrima, but obviously you're not there now. I mean, Berrima is just a world of light industrial.
Oh, yeah. Well, our place, we sold that in 65. Henry and Walker actually bought our block there. We'd subdivided off the front. Dad built a soft drink factory, actually. Taylor Industries, I think, was in that shed. I don't know if they're still there, but they were. It was a fully equipped factory.
Hmm.
And anyhow, when the government officials of the day, they sort of said to him, well, you've got power on now. Well, there was a bit of a battle, but anyway. What are you going to do for water? And Dad said, well, I've got a bore. It's certified for human consumption. I said, yeah, it's certified for human consumption, but it's not certified for manufacturing. And they wanted him to run the water from the Stuart Highway up to the shed at his own cost completely. Anybody else who wanted to tap into it could if they wanted to. So, you know, Dad said, I'll shove it. But it was a complete factory. It was there.
Yeah.
Ready to go, basically. And, when we sold out, I can remember we burnt boxes of labels. There was semi-trailer loads of bottles there.
When you were allowed to incinerate things in the open air.
There's that too, eh? But, you know, it was just, you know, the problem was that Dad wasn't a member of the Darwin Club and, wasn't sort of...
Yeah.
Brown-nosing to the right people, I suppose.
Jeff Casey is my guest. I'm going to keep reminiscing with him as we do remember for a little while longer, directly after this.
Every now and again, you meet someone truly extraordinary.
And the corpse seemed to slightly sit up. And the next minute, there is the smell of death.
When the famous, eccentric, hilarious crime writer Linda LaPlante joined me in the guest room for an hour, she knocked my socks off.
Wait, let's get this clear. I wasn't actually working in the brothel. I was researching.
If you missed Linda LaPlante in the guest room, download it now from abc.net.au/Darwin.
Touching on 3:30, and my guest in the guest room, well, I was going to say in the guest room, but he's in the Remember room at the moment, is Jeff Casey. Remember in the old days, and they do really, there's such a great taste to those stories that you're telling, you know, they're so territory. I want to get onto a couple of other things, though, because I promised people I would tell them why this was so. Somebody ran over you in a panel van and it changed your life. I want to know this story of you being run over by a panel van.
Well, it's not quite run over. No. We had the Doris Vale Barite mine operating at the time, and that was 78, November 78. And I was going back to work. I'd just come up for some time off. I was the fitter down there. And Dad and I were going back to take over drilling, and because our driller had shot through, chasing his wife down to Tennant Creek after, you know, she'd done a bunk. And we were going back down in the ute, and we got sort of halfway between Emerald Springs and Pine Creek, and we got cleaned up by a bloke in a panel van.
Yeah.
So, he was pretty well plastered as well. We had dinner at the Emerald Springs and bumped into one of my mad mates from school. He was on his way to Perth, a bit of a bikie. And after he heard that we'd been wiped out, well, I had been. Everybody thought I was dead. Took him about 4 hours to get me out of the wreckage.
Wow.
He had a wake for me. Only bloke that's had a wake for me so far.
There's not really many people who come out the other side of their own wake.
No. Well, your record was pretty good, but I missed out, eh, you know. But then the funny part is about how many years later, when the immigration department took over the Kurrugundi scout camp, well, I was a scout leader at the time, and I had a few things to say about it, and I got interviewed, I think it might have been you guys, about this. And... Steve was down in Perth, and he says, I'm sitting there watching the news. He says, and my wife comes out with the dinner. He says, and she says, you look like you've seen a ghost. He says, I think I have. He says, I had a wake for that mongrel. Here he is alive. Trick me.
Look, Jeff Casey, you're going to have too many stories to tell, and I think I'm going to make a series out of you somehow. I'm going to somehow get you to keep coming. I'm going to convince you that it's worth driving to town on a regular basis because you've got too many things to tell me. I want you to get onto a couple of other yarns, though. But as I say, when I started off, I said you've got four kids, you've got eight grandkids, a dog, a fish, a bird. You're the lovely wife, of course. Unfortunately, yeah, Jerry, the first time I mentioned it, I actually put her in that list, and I feel a bit bad about that. Where's the family now? Are they all Territorians, or are they held onto the territory in the same sort of way that you did?
The two oldest boys, they're over in Queensland. One's in Dalby. He's running an oil field supply company. He's a horticulturist by trade. And the other lad's he's an electrician, works in a power station over there. And
do you reckon that's because the opportunity or the allure of the territory wasn't quite there in the way it might have been for you, even though you tried to escape and couldn't get away?
Oh, no, I think that. I mean, Sean, the eldest lad, he started out with after he finished up, he used to work at Tropicus Nursery. That's where he did his apprenticeship. When they closed down, he got a job with West Farmers down in Katherine after doing a bit of fencing and stuff like that. And then he transferred from there down to South Australia, a couple of different branches there, and management position came up over in Queensland, so he shifted over there, took that up. Then he got headhunted by Elders up to Roma, but that didn't seem to work out because for one thing and another. And then he was assistant manager in a club. He got headhunted again to open an insurance office.
6 degrees of separation, really.
Nothing like variety.
No, well, that's to say that, you know, life is where it leads you as much as
anything. Yeah, exactly. And he told the company, they're an Adelaide-based company, he told them that, you know, it was going to take them at least 2 years to crack square. He did that in 6 months, but the company couldn't see themselves making big mobs of money, so they said, oh, well, you know, this isn't working out the way we thought it would. And he said, well, it's doing better than I thought it would. But anyhow, they decided to close the office down, and so he moved on. And, yeah.
Life goes on. You've got to, one of the things I like about you is you say that you want to reach your 100th wedding anniversary. Now, how many more years have you got to fit in before you get to 100?
65.
I look at you. You look pretty healthy. I'd give you an outside chance of making it. Just an outside chance.
Oh, well, I've asked the boss respectfully that, you know, he might allow me to expire on the day after, because I think I'll have such a hangover, I'll be so crook.
I feel terrible that I've hardly spoken to you about Life in Earth movie and all the things that you've done, but time is against us, as it always is. Mate, you have to come in. You must come in. I've got to force you to drive back in, you know. Take that trip from Berry Springs to home and come and sit and chat to us at some other time. When I saw these two songs, I could go, oh, yeah, Slim Dusty, yep, I'll go with that. And then I got Mull of Kintyre from Paul McCartney. Now, I know that people love this song, and it's right crack in the middle of the era when I was watching telly in high school and thinking, wow, is this song ever not going to be number one on Countdown? It just was weeks and weeks and weeks at number one in Australia. Why Mull of Kintyre? Why have you chosen that?
Well, I like bagpipe music as well, and I don't know, it's just got a lilting sort of melody that sort of appeals. I like a lot of different sort of music, you know. I mean, my tastes sort of run from, you know, classical through to heavy rock, depending on what sort of mood I'm in.
But, oh, I love a man with a Catholic taste in the music.
I'm one of them too.
I was going to say, you're out there in the middle of the bush. You got the Deep Purple still cranking, and then a little bit of the.
The tapes in the truck is to range from, as you say, you know, Deep Purple, Uriah Heep, you know, Slim Dusty. Who's that bloke that pranked his aeroplane?
John Denver?
Yeah, a bit of that, you know.
There's a lot of people who've pranked aeroplanes
in the music business. Yeah, well, that's true, eh? Yeah.
Buddy Holly?
Buddy Holly, he went down. Yeah, well, you know, even, you know, like Nat King Cole and Louis Armstrong and those sort of things. Just depends on the mood.
Yeah. That's what I like. I like to see it. And you, don't tell me you're still running a cassette player in your trucks.
No. Damn thing died.
I was just going to say,
couldn't get parts for it.
Hey, listen, it's been a real pleasure, mate. Thank you so much for coming in and spending a bit of time for us. Against your better judgment.
It's a risk coming past Palmerston.
I'm definitely going to invite you back in. I'm going to force you to come back in. Lovely to talk to you.
It's all good
fun. Yeah, thanks very much. Jeff Casey is the man. He's our remember guest this afternoon. I reckon there's more than one or two stories still to be told. We just scratched the surface. Mull of Kintyre. This is his choice today. 23 to 4.